This is an interview with Donna Kubik from Fermilab. For the full show, go to jawcast.net.
Thank you very much for joining us. And tell us a little bit about the work that you do. You work as part of the Dark Energy Survey. What does that mean?
That's right. This is a project that's an international collaboration, and we're aiming to refit a telescope in the Southern Hemisphere with equipment that can survey the entire sky in the Southern Hemisphere and to try and find out what dark energy is.
Okay, that's a good start. Let's talk about what this amazing thing called dark energy is. What do we think dark energy is?
We don't know what dark energy is, but what we're trying to explain that we call dark energy is the observation in 1998 that the rate of acceleration or expansion of the universe is accelerating. Mm-hmm. It had been thought that perhaps after the Big Bang, the expansion of the universe would eventually slow down and gravity would overtake the initial push, the initial acceleration, and either reach a steady state or then collapse again. Right. However, from observation of supernova, very distant standard candles, astronomers call them, it was observed by two independent groups that the rate of expansion is actually accelerating.
Okay, so the universe isn't just expanding, it's expanding faster and faster and faster.
Yes, and this was very surprising. This is not what astronomers expected to find. And since that observation, first it was very compelling because two independent groups discovered it. However, they were using the same tool. They were studying supernova, which they could measure characteristics of these supernova to know their distance and their velocity by looking at the redshift and the brightness.
The problem with having two groups using the same tool, essentially, is they could be using the tool incorrectly, basically. Is that the idea?
That's right. They could have the same systematic errors. But since then, there are other tools that have come to the same conclusion, like studying the microwave background points to the same kind of conclusion. So it's pretty compelling that there's something that we don't understand that is causing the universe to kind of push apart, sort of push in the direction opposite of gravity.
But so this is the mysterious dark energy.
Yes, yes, and it truly is mysterious. So ways that we can try and get more evidence for what it could be would be to get more data, to make more observations of the structure of matter and how it's distributed in three dimensions in the universe.
So we go back one step. We know that gravity operates on the universe as a whole, so the universe contains matter, and even though the universe is expanding outwards, presumably from the effects of the Big Bang still, gravity ought to try and pull everything back together again, or to try and squeeze the universe back down in towards itself again. However, we don't see that. We see the universe expanding, but we also see it being expanding faster and faster and faster, so there must be some force operating against gravity to keep on pushing the universe outwards.
Yes, but there is not a force that we know of that's in the textbooks today that can be attributed to that.
Right.
And that's the mystery, and that's the goal. That's what many, many astronomers hope to figure out by making more observations.
What's the difference between dark energy and dark matter?
They're totally different and totally unrelated. Dark matter does respond to gravity, and dark matter causes things to contract and clump and would help form galaxies and attract galaxies to other galaxies and form structure in the universe, whereby dark energy has the opposite effect. It pushes things apart.
Mm-hmm.
So they're quite different, although their names sound very similar, and they're often confused if you don't look at the word that dark is modifying.
Dark in both cases basically means we know it exists in some form, but we can't figure out what on earth it is.
Right. In both cases, we don't know what the cause is or the origin is of them, but they are unrelated.
In the case of dark energy, do we have any idea what could be providing this, essentially, energy force blowing the universe apart faster and faster?
Some theoreticians do, and there's the idea of a cosmological constant, which always brings up the story of Einstein, and first he had to impose a cosmological constant to keep the universe static because his calculations had initially implied that the universe was not static, which wasn't, he wasn't comfortable with that.
And this is his theory of general relativity, basically, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
And this amazing cosmological constant is a part of his theory. It wasn't something which he added in, or just it was just a fun thing to have. It was part of his theory, his mathematics.
Yes, it could. Yeah, and it could be given a value, and what that value would be now is different than what he was, than the value he would have attributed.
He didn't like it originally, did he?
At all, not at all. But now he would probably be very happy that it was part of his theory. But it's not. We're not certain that that's. That that is related to dark energy, but it certainly could be, and that would be one of the ideas that the Dark Energy Survey would want to try to test. So we want to get more information about the distribution of matter in the universe.
I think it's important to point out that Einstein's general theory of relativity is currently our best understanding of how the universe evolves as a whole, and this mysterious dark energy can be explained as part of Einstein's general theory. So it's nice to know he could have predicted it back in the day. He just didn't like it very much.
Yes, yes. But he didn't know, he didn't have this, the advantage we have today of all of these observations, and especially those of the supernova in 1998, that implied, or that tell us that the universe is expanding faster and faster.
Tell us a little bit about the Dark Energy Survey itself.
The Dark Energy Survey will measure, well, it's actually comprised of four sets of observations that can go on almost all simultaneously. Three of them can go on simultaneously, and that's to measure the structure in the universe using something called weak lensing, which is the effect of mass bending the path of light. The amount that light is bent is a function of how massive something is. So if we look at how distant galaxies are distorted by the matter in between us and these distant galaxies, we can learn about how much matter is between us and it, and then learn about the distribution of space and matter and time. So this weak lensing is the first of the four methods. The second is to look at the distribution of galaxy clusters, and this is an optical survey, so I didn't say that at the beginning of the Dark Energy Survey. We'll use an optical telescope, a 4-meter telescope in the southern hemisphere. It will have a wide field of view, be able to look at 3 square degrees of the sky at one time, so which is important when you want to survey a large area of the sky because you have to see a lot of it at once. And it will have a camera on it that's made out of digital cameras, very much like the digital camera that you take pictures of things on your vacation, only these are extra sensitive to really long wavelengths because we want to look at things that have been highly redshifted, which means that normal wavelengths have been shifted, stretched out more and more and more, and we want to be able to use this telescope to see the most distant things we can see with these optical devices.
Right.
So we're sort of refitting this telescope, which has a narrow field of view now, and not those kind of CCDs. It has CCDs that can't right now, that can't see so far into the infrared. The Dark Energy Survey is rebuilding the optics and is building a new camera that can do this job and look further into the past, look at more highly redshifted things.
So we have two out of the four things that the new operation is going to be looking at. That's the weak lensing survey, basically looking at the shapes of galaxy images, and galaxy clustering. We have their redshifts and their position. We know how the galaxies are positioned in space. You mentioned there are four things that the survey is going to be doing. What are the other two things?
The other two are baryon acoustic oscillations and supernova. And the supernova search is similar to the one that started all this. In 1998, we'll be looking again at supernova, only now even more distant supernova.
Presumably you're going to get, with the supernova search that you do, similar results to what the original two teams got, different results. It would be interesting either way.
I probably shouldn't predict.
Well, it'll be exciting finding out, right?
Yes, I think so.
And the third thing, baryonic acoustic oscillations. This is CMB stuff, right?
So this is in the early universe. Mm-hmm. So when things were high pressure, and then as things were expanding, the pressure got less. So you get these kind of sound waves oscillating. Mm-hmm. And these oscillations are imprinted on the density of matter and therefore the distribution of matter. So the distribution of things that formed from the original densities in the early universe galaxies and then clusters of galaxies would have characteristic separations that you can observe if you have enough statistics and you look at the separations of galaxies or look at, they call them correlation functions, of clusters.
Mm-hmm. So you're going back, looking at the effects of what happened very early on in the universe. Basically, the universe started, it went bang, and then bits of it started to oscillate, ring like a bell, basically, sort of wobble backwards and forwards. These are these oscillations that you mentioned.
Yes, and we can see the effects of these oscillations throughout the universe as we're looking from now back in time. The way matter is distributed now is related to what happened back then.
So this 4-meter telescope in the southern hemisphere is going to stare at the universe that it can see and basically collect images of galaxies.
Yes.
And then you're going to look very, very carefully at the galaxies, and what exactly are you going to measure?
So we'll measure the location of the galaxies and the brightness of the galaxies, and we'll observe every single galaxy through 4 different filters, actually 5 different filters now. And the reason we want to do that is by comparing the amount of light through the different filters, we can learn about the redshift of the object. Often astronomers measure the redshift by looking at the spectrum. So you need to do 2 things. You would need to take time to take an image of the sky and look at all of the galaxies, and then you need to, one at a time, get their spectrum. Mm-hmm. But there's another way, by looking at every object through all these 5 filters, that we can figure out the redshift by comparing the amount of light, the relative amount of light through each filter. And this is very important because you can get much, much more data in a shorter amount of time than you could if you had to actually get the spectrum of each object.
So this gives you the real position of all these galaxies, how far away they are and in what direction.
Right. So by the image, you get 2 dimensions. And then by comparing the colors through these filters, you can get the 3rd dimension. So you have a 3-dimensional view of the universe.
And that tells you how the galaxies presumably are positioned in space, and you expect to see them clumped together, presumably.
Yes, and how much they're clumped together depends on how much gravity has affected them and how much dark energy has opposed gravities. So it's a way of trying to figure out how the 2 forces, dark energy and gravity, have balanced each other or not balanced each other throughout time, and how, whether that's been a constant, or I would say it certainly hasn't been constant, but how those relative forces have changed.
How important is dark energy in our understanding of the universe?
It's about 70% of everything that we know of the energy budget in the universe. The rest of it is dark matter, and very, very small fraction of it, let's say less than 1%, is what we're, you and I, are made out of. So if we want to have any understanding of what the majority of the universe is made out of, we need to try and figure out what dark energy is and dark matter, which is also a large fraction, but dark energy is even a larger fraction of what the universe is made out of.
So we take the entire, you know, collection of stuff in the universe, and we ask, including energy, 70% of it is this mysterious dark energy. Some other fraction, I think it's about 20%, is dark matter, and the rest is sort of baryonic, you know.
Yeah. Yes. So it's quite humbling.
It's quite upsetting, really, isn't it, when we realize that most of, we have absolutely no idea what most of the universe is made of.
Yes, and we've just changed our minds. I mean, we've just had to start living with this for in the past less than 10 years, which is, I think, quite exciting to be able to be part of this right now.
Well, it's fantastic to be able to ask these questions now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel very lucky.
So how soon before the new telescope will be operational?
Probably not until 2011. That's when we plan on being fully commissioned and taking data.
Mm-hmm. And what's your specific job in the Dark Energy Survey?
My job is helping to build the camera that's made out of these sort of souped-up CCDs that can see these really long wavelengths. Mm-hmm. We have to make this huge array of them and fill it up with about 70 of these CCDs. So we have to get 70 of these 2,000 by 4,000 pixels that are...
CCD chips.
Yes, and all the CCD chips to be working very well, you know, and it's a lot of pixels that have to be good and give you good images. And so you have to sort through all those you get from the manufacturer and find those that are good enough to do the job. So you learn from the astronomers what's required. You know, how good do these devices have to operate?
So some of the CCD chips that you receive from the manufacturer are going to be, well, substandard. They're going to have presumably dead pixels or lines or something like that. You have to choose
exactly
which ones are the right ones,
exactly,
the best ones.
Yeah.
And when do you expect the whole system to be operational?
In 2011. Totally. All the bugs will be out of it. And we'll be taking data. And the telescope will also be open to be used for two other astronomers, you know, in addition to those working on the dark energy survey. So some of the time will be devoted to other kinds of astronomy.
Presumably wide field astronomy, people will need to see.
Still wide field, yeah.
Where do you work?
So I work at Fermilab, which is the home of a large particle accelerator, an electron. It's a proton-antiproton collider. And so historically, it was a high-energy physics lab, and it still is, although many high-energy physicists are now in the astrophysics group, and many are now working full-time on the dark energy survey.
It's a remarkably famous institution. It's known right across the world.
Yes, many. The top quark was discovered there, and a lot of neutrino research. There is a lot of neutrino research going on, so it's been a premier particle physics laboratory for decades, and hopefully will continue to be. But astrophysics is also a growing department within Fermilab.
Well, thank you very, very much indeed for talking to us today.
Thank you.